From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. Thank you so much. We have got such a great show for you today, but first we have to share an important warning. A lot of people come up to us and they say, hey, I get all my news from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and we find this both flattering and terrifying for the nation. Turns out, though, not a good idea. A new study was done in television, but we think it applies. It turns out that news entertainment shows like ours are not actually as good a source of the news as actual straight newscasts. The good news, though, is that they discovered that people who just watch or listen to news entertainment shows like ours actually know more than people who don't watch or listen to anything. So that's our new slogan, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, slightly better than just staring at a wall. Prove our point. Give us a call. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Marianne Reardon from Sudbury, Massachusetts.
Sudbury, Massachusetts?
Yes.
That happens to be the hometown of one Paula Poundstone.
Oh, really?
You didn't know that?
I think I did. She went to Lincoln Sudbury High School.
They don't have, like, plaques and stores selling souvenirs? And
they don't, no.
No. It's a shame she's not here. Otherwise, she and you would talk forever about that.
Yes.
Maybe it's a good thing she's not here. Let me introduce you to our panel this week, Marianne. First, say hello to a writer and comedian, Mr. Paul Prevenza.
Hello, Marianne. How are you?
Good.
Next, say hello to the woman behind the syndicated advice column, Ask Amy, Ms. Amy Dickinson.
Hi, Amy.
Hi, Marianne.
And lastly, say hello to a humorist and the author of the forthcoming book, Alphabet Juice, Mr. Roy Blunt, Jr.
Hi, Roy.
Well, welcome to the show. Now, you're going to start us off with Who's Carl This Time. Carl Castle will read you three quotes from the week's news. Of course, if you can correctly identify or explain just two of them, you will win our prize. Carl's voice in your home answering machine. Ready to go?
Yes.
All right. Here's your first quote.
Keep in mind that technically, had I meant it this way, she would be the lipstick.
Mm. That was Barack Obama on the David Letterman show on Wednesday doing his best to make a silk purse out of his use of the term lipstick on a pig that many in the GOP interpreted as an insult to whom?
The vice president of the Republican Party candidate, Sarah Palin.
Sarah Palin, exactly right. A couple of weeks ago, Governor Palin was an unknown in the national scene. This week, well, it's Sarah Palin's country, and we're just living in it until she either throws us out or shoots us from a helicopter. The McCain campaign insists simultaneously that she is tough, experienced, and ready to be president if need be, and that anybody who insults her is a horrible meanie. Now, Barack Obama reacted to the storm of prefabricated outrage in his usual aggressive fly-off-the-handle way. He wrote a stern letter to the McCain campaign asking them to please, if they're not too busy, come by and remove their knife from his back. Now, meanwhile, Governor Palin herself sat down for her first interview with Charlie Gibson of ABC News, where after 2 weeks of being coached in seclusion by a team of advisors, she said very reasonable things, such as, quote, we cannot repeat the Cold War. We are thankful that under Reagan we won the Cold War without a shot fired, smile, nod confidently, look at the liberal media jerk like you care, unquote.
She actually was, I thought she was going to answer every question with thanks, but no thanks.
She actually, what was interesting about her interview with Charlie Gibson on the foreign policy issues, which they focused on to begin with, was how ready and eager she was to throw down some foreign names.
Yeah.
She was like, Ahmadinejad. Well, of course, when dealing with Ahmadinejad, and you know she spent the last week walking up and down her front yard going, Ahmadinejad, 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 Ahmadinejad. So where are you guys standing on the whole lipstick and a pig issue, that huge scandal that erupted?
I just don't think pigs deserve to be subjected to this kind of analysis.
I'm telling you. You know, first you put lipstick on a pig, and then a couple of years later you got to give him facelifts and Botox. it's just going to get out of hand.
They want it every
Next
morning.
Next thing now, you're standing there with your pig going, no, that doesn't make you look fat, really. It's a terrible thing.
The pig going, you never take me anywhere.
It always used to be that you could kiss a pig and nobody would know, but if you put lipstick on it.
All right, Marianne, here's your next quote.
You're invited. Have you and the girls meet at my place at 6 a.m. for bubble baths and final prep. Just kidding.
That was from an email included in a damning report that was released this week describing the zany partying, drug use, sexual shenanigans, and general corruption that was the standard way of doing business where?
With the oil companies, I think.
It was doing business with the oil companies, but it was the government agency that was dealing with them is what we're looking for.
They had ulterior motives.
Department of the Interior.
Yes! Thank you! Who knew that the Interior Department was where the bacchanal was going on? The Interior Department's Mineral Management Service sells oil and natural gas that comes from leased lands. And since they are, in effect, instead of government bureaucrats, they're oil tycoons, apparently, they decided to act that way. The Interior Department's General Inspection Report reads more like a combination of the TV show Dallas and George W. Bush's early 30s. The Inspector General says the staff routinely accepted cash and gifts from the oil companies they did business with. Plus, sometimes they had sex with them when they weren't having sex with each other or doing cocaine in the office. Writing about the gross violations of ethics in the office, the Inspector General wrote, quote, sexual relationships with prohibited sources cannot, by definition, be arm's length, unquote. However, you could argue that arm's length is close enough for government sex. So,
you know, if
I did not have sexual relations with that industry.
Right, right.
Oh, but they did. All right, here is your last quote.
Success! The world hasn't ended. We are all still alive.
So what physics experiment didn't, as some feared, destroy the world when it was turned on this week?
The particle collider.
Yes, known as the Large Hadron Collider in Europe. Very good. It's the largest, most expensive science experiment in the history of the world. The physicists who built it say that it could answer some of the most basic questions about the nature of the universe, but other people said that when they turned it on, it would destroy the world. Carl, has the Earth ended yet?
Nope.
Wait, wasn't it supposed to, like, open up a black hole and swallow everybody?
Well, I'm checking. Carl, has that happened?
Nope.
All right.
But would we know if it had?
Presumably. Well, Carl would know. That's why I'm asking him.
Oh, that's true.
It's his job.
I'll let you know.
He'll let us know.
All right.
Carl, how did Marianne do in our quiz?
She did very well, Peter. 3 correct answers. Marianne, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Great.
Well done. Well done, Marianne.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for playing.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Roy, the American presidential campaign is getting nasty, but not, we are proud to say, as nasty as things are getting up in Canada. Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper was forced to apologize for a campaign ad that showed what happening to his rival.
Did it involve a moose? Because it does down here.
It did not involve a moose, although it did involve an animal.
An animal?
Yes.
He's trampled by a herd of reindeer.
No.
No. Could I have a hint? I have no. I don't know. I don't keep up.
Well, apparently, his rival was standing under a tree, foolishly.
Oh, a bird or somebody pooped on his
That's
head.
Exactly right. Oh. The ad shows
not just a bird,
a puffin.
A puffin.
A puffin pooping.
Puffin poop is
on
the worst.
The Liberal candidate for Prime Minister. Puffins are, of course, these Arctic birds, very beautiful, very cute.
They're nice little birds.
And in an ad that was put up on the Canadian Conservative Party's website, one of these birds flies over Stéphane Dion. That's Stéphane Dion, by the way, not Celine, so don't get excited. And made kind
but
of
the puffins are trained to go after any Dion just in case it's Celine.
This ad caused quite the ruckus. In fact, some observers say that the ad is the most interesting thing ever to happen in Canada. And here's the difference between the U.S. and Canada, right? People said, oh, you have this ad on your website showing a puffin pooping on your rival. And they took it down and apologized.
No, come on.
That would never happen in America.
No. In America, we'd put lipstick on that puffin.
Exactly. In America, we would load that puffin up with burritos and X-Lax and launch a second wave. We would... Oh, if he can't take being pooped on by a puffin, how is he going to take being pooped on by Putin?
No. Exactly.
That's where we would go.
But when you are pooped on pooped on by a puffin in Canada, you got health care.
That's true.
Oh, there once was a puffin just the shape of a muffin, and he lived on an island in the deep blue sea. He ate little fishes that were oh so delicious, and he had them for supper and he had them for tea.
Thank you so much. Right now it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
My name's Jackie Smith.
Hello, Jackie Smith. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm fine. Where are you calling from?
Santa Rosa, California.
Oh, that's a beautiful place.
It is.
That's a lovely place. What do you do there?
We drink a lot of wine.
That's all one needs to do, I think.
That's it.
Well, welcome to our show, Jacqueline.
Now, Thank you. You
are going to play the game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Jacqueline's topic?
This will totally make up for that Iraq war thing.
Look, it's no secret that the rest of the world, well, they're not the biggest fans of the good old red, white, and blue these days. But worry not, my fellow Americans. The U.S.'s image abroad is about to change. This week we read about an effort to improve U.S. relations with the global community. Our panelists are going to tell you three stories about new diplomatic efforts. Choose that real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Ready to go?
Yeah.
Here we go. First, let's hear from Paul Prevenza.
What better way to seek approval than by aligning with a celebrity that people adore? And who better to counter the image that America is loud, boorish, and belligerent than TV's The Nanny, Fran Drescher? Chosen to be our newest official envoy for U.S. public diplomacy, the Golden Globe and Emmy nominee will be traveling the world as the voice of the American people, albeit a whiny and annoying voice. Ms. Drescher's first trip this month will include stops in Romania, Hungary, Kosovo, and Poland, supporting U.S. diplomacy efforts worldwide. Her efforts include work with health organizations and women's groups and raising cancer awareness and detection, efforts she has been supporting since she founded the nonprofit organization Cancer Schmancer. Other celebrities have held such diplomatic posts in the past, although Mr. Belvedere has apparently never been considered.
Your next story of a new diplomatic effort comes from Amy Dickinson.
The United States Department of Agriculture Office of Products Ambassadors promotes American products overseas. Past ambassadors include Bruno Broccoli and Charlie the Inflatable Wedge of Farm Fresh Wisconsin Cheese. This year's focus was on meat. Actor Steve Mandel, a department employee, dressed up as Tom Turkey and visited the other turkey, the one in the Middle East. He also played Larry the Lamb Shank in Portugal with no trouble at all. But when the department dispatched Mandel as Wilbur, the American spokesham, to our friends in Pakistan, many non-pork-eating citizens took offense. Wilbur was shoved in his pork belly, punched in his haunches, beaten soundly, and thrown in a gully. Pakistan's ambassador to the UN raised the issue, calling it an international incident and saying, if he doesn't leave the country immediately, this porcine menace is going to be exported in sausage casings.
Wilbur, the spokesham, does not make a hit in Pakistan, and your last story of the U.S. making amends somehow comes from Roy Blunt, Jr.
Recently, the State Department convened focus groups around the world to critique the traditional image of Uncle Sam. Some of the comments, too old, too white, too cranky looking. This, to you, is avuncular and lose everything but the hat. So, it was disclosed this week, the State Department commissioned several actually interesting illustrators to come up with alternative Uncle Sams. When higher-ups got wind of the project, however, they put the kibosh on it. So we may never see the Ann Getty's weird baby Uncle Sam popping out of cabbages, or R. Crumb's Uncle Sam riding horsey on the back of a, shall we say, extraordinarily proportioned woman, or William Wegman's Weimaraner Uncle Sam, or Eric Carle's very hungry caterpillar Uncle Sam. It is rumored that Maurice Sendak's Uncle Sam made the wild things look like Winnie the Pooh.
All right, these are your choices. From Paul Prevenza, Fran Drescher, the nanny, becomes a voice of America. From Amy Dickinson, the U.S. Department of Agriculture's outreach program goes awry with a porker in Pakistan. Or from Roy Blunt Jr., a whole new series of variations on Uncle Sam all end up having to be scrapped, which is the story of an American diplomatic outreach in the news this week.
Well, they're all so bad. I think I'm attached to number three.
You're attached to number three. That's Roy's story, the new versions
of
Uncle Sam.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Ann Getty's with little Uncle Sam coming out of a little pumpkin.
Well, I want to see those pictures.
So do I. We can't show them to you, but we can play you this. We actually spoke to somebody who was directly involved in this diplomatic effort.
I'm public diplomacy special envoy for women's health issues for the U.S. State Department. So I'll be sharing my message of women's health advocacy to women all over the world.
That, as I need not tell you,
the voice of America,
was Fran Drescher. She is, in fact, now the U.S. public diplomacy envoy for the United States, explaining her mission there to talk about cancer prevention around the world.
Right.
Actually, the organization Cancer Schmancer is a real organization. They do really great work on advocacy and patient empowerment.
Yes,
I know it sounds like a joke.
I know, it is. Well, it's a joke, but it's a good joke. It's Fran Drescher's joke.
She sounded super psyched.
Yes, she's very excited. This is good for her. It's good for her organization. It's good for the world. It's good for America. It's not, sadly, so good for you, Jackie, because
I'm
as you now know,
Jackie.
Paul had the real answer. Roy fooled you.
I'm sorry.
And by doing so, he did earn a point, but you did not win her prize. I'm so sorry.
Well,
Jackie,
thanks for having me on.
Jackie, it was great to have you.
Okay. Mm.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
She's
a lady in red when everybody else is wearing tan. The flashy girl from Flushing.
And now the game where we ask experts about something else entirely. Stefan Fatsis is a 45-year-old sports writer. He contributes to the Wall Street Journal and, of course, NPR's All Things Considered. Now, like all of us in public radio, physically, let's say, Stefan's not going to be posing for the cover of Muscle and Fitness anytime soon. Nonetheless, a couple of years ago, he actually joined the Denver Broncos. That would be an actual NFL football team. As a place kicker, and he writes about this remarkable adventure in his new book, A Few Seconds of Panic. Stefan, welcome back to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
It is good to be here, Peter.
It's great to have you. Now, other than fulfilling every boy's fantasy of being a football player, what actually inspired you to pursue this this project?
A naked admiration for George Plimpton and a belief that 40-plus years later, someone should try to do what Plimpton did in the early 1960s, which was play for an NFL team and find out what life was actually like inside the NFL.
But as you point out in your book, when Plimpton did that in the early 60s to write Paper Lion, those old days, and players got paid nothing, there was hardly any money in it, you could just walk on, nobody cared. These days, it's a multi-billion dollar industry, right?
Absolutely, and that was part of the motivation, too. You know, I feel, and Roy may agree with this, is that, you know, for all that we hear and read about in newspapers, magazines, and on television and the internet, I think we have a pretty thin understanding of what actually goes on inside professional sports leagues, and particularly in the NFL. Mm. And Roy, of course, can speak to this experience because he wrote an amazing book about the Pittsburgh Steelers in the mid-1970s.
Oh, thank you, but it's a lot harder now to get at the players.
Yeah, because they're completely insulated from the media, and they've been conditioned for years to answer questions in sort of sound bites and bromides and banalities.
Yeah.
And trying to penetrate that wall was one of the challenges that I faced and was really the main challenge, because what I wanted to do was understand what these guys go through and what it takes to run one of these giant businesses.
So what was the deal? You went to the NFL teams that you knew about and you connected to through your work as a sports writer. And what was, you said, I want to come be a kicker for your team.
Yes.
And They said what?
No, and I can keep going. Mm. It was about 20 teams before I got a yes from the Denver Broncos.
So you weren't actually asking the teams to like let you play for them in a game, and that wasn't. I mean, you weren't actually trying out for the team, were you?
I would have loved to have played in a game had the NFL let me, and the Broncos were willing to. I'd never played football in my life. I'd been a soccer player, so I had some ability to kick a ball. I was kicking 35 and 40-yard field goals during my summer in Denver, which are chip shots for any NFL kicker, any college kicker, any good high school kicker. But for someone who'd never done it before, I was damn proud of myself when the ball went through the upright from 40 yards away.
So I've got a whole bunch of questions for you. The first question was, when these guys found out who you were and what you were doing there, why didn't they simply snap you across their knees and throw you away?
What they made me do immediately was sing my college fight song, I Swear to God.
Oh, just like in Paper Lion. Had they read the book?
I think they'd been around a while. At least they were familiar with the cliche, what you were supposed to do. So I kind of whispered it in front of my locker, in front of seven offensive linemen, each one bigger than the last.
Hey, Stefan?
Yeah?
So you say you had a locker. Like, did you remain outside the locker, or did they stuff you into it?
Believe me, when I had to kick in front of the team and I missed some field goals, they threatened to do worse than stuff me inside the locker.
But at any point, were you offered steroids, like, you know, behind the field, you know, underneath the bleachers?
I could have used them.
Nobody would have begrudged you a steroid or two, I'm sure. This is my favorite thing about kickers. When the receiver gets through the line, the special teams line, the kicker is often the last guy between the person running the ball back and the goal, and the kicker has to go tackle somebody. I love it when that happens. Did you ever like practice that?
Fortunately, I did not have to experience that. I mean, the reality was, if these guys wanted to, they could have killed me at any moment.
I got one last question. Have you been so lording it over your like your colleagues and friends and like the Washington media? Have you been like, well, you know, back in the NFL? The way that we would handle this problem is we'd simply drive up the middle and not take no for an answer, and people just get tired of it.
I'll be doing that for the rest of my life.
I bet you will.
Has your Ben Gay budget gone through the roof?
You know, when I would tape my body up, and I had to sort of halfway through camp, I had a strained groin and a strained hip flexor and a strained everything else below my waist. And I would sort of apply all kinds of Bengay equivalents and wrap my legs in ace bandages. And the other players would look at me and they would laugh.
And you were like, does my verbal SAT score count for nothing in this world? Actually, no, it doesn't. Well, Stefan Fatsis, we're so thrilled to have you back with us. We have invited you here this time to play a game that we're calling...
You're the Last Living Stalinist Tyrant, we think.
Excellent.
This week came reports that Kim Jong-il, dear leader of North Korea, might be gravely ill. Or he might be not. Or maybe he's been dead for 6 years, as one scholar has suggested. And the whole regime is an elaborate real-life version of Weekend at Bernie's. Who knows? We thought we would review the remarkable career of the world's last true evil dictator, answer two questions correctly about the life and times of King Jong-il. You'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Stefan Fatsis playing for?
Stefan is playing for David Andrews of Amesbury, Massachusetts.
All right. Here's your first question, Stefan.
I'm ready.
Kim Jong-il was born in a camp in Soviet Siberia, but that's not what his official biography says. No, according to the North Korean official news agency, from whence sprang the dear leader? A, he was born in a laboratory, the first and only successful human clone, in his case, of his father, the beloved leader, Kim Il-sung. B, he was born on top of the highest mountain in North Korea, and his birth was marked by a double rainbow and a new star in the heavens. Or C, he was born of a virgin in a manger. On a farm outside Pyongyang.
I'm going to go with B, mountaintop.
The mountaintop. You're right, sir. The official and completely untrue story is that he was born in a secret camp on North Korea's highest mountain, and the heavens themselves welcomed his arrival.
Ah.
What do you do when your insane dictator loses his mind?
Maybe he becomes sane.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
He wakes up. All right, that's good. That was the 15-yarder. Now we're moving back a little bit harder this time. Next question. Dear leader's achievements in politics and art have been widely trumpeted by the North Korean government, but he can do even more. For example, according to official sources, Kim Jong-il also has what skill? A, he is a superb clothing designer, having himself created the uniforms of the massive North Korean military. B, he is a gourmet chef, often making the dishes served to foreign leaders that visit him. Or C, he is a scratch golfer, often getting several holes in one in a single round.
Well, that happens when the sky parts and
everything. Yeah, I know.
That was his first, it wasn't right after he was born. He hit it off the mountaintop.
Exactly.
Out onto the green below. I'm going to go with chef.
You're going to go with chef, that he's a brilliant gourmet chef. No, he's a scratch golfer, according to the North Korean agency. They say that the very first time he played golf on the nation's only golf course outside Pyongyang, he scored 38 under par.
Wow.
Did he get it into the clown's mouth? I guess he did.
I guess he did.
Yeah.
I think he's Kim Jong-il. The clown moves to catch it, you know.
Good thing he wasn't in the Broncos camp with me.
That's
he would have kicked my ass.
That's true. Well, I'm sure he could do that.
He did. Oh.
Or slapped it. That seems to be going on a lot in the Broncos camp. I'm just saying. All right. This is very exciting. As a sports writer, you'll appreciate the drama here. It comes down to this. Get this one right, you win the big prize. All right, Kim Jong-il does not like to fly. He's afraid of it. So on one of his very few trips out of the country, he took a special train across Russia to visit Moscow. It was a long trip, so he arranged what for his comfort along the way? A, he had a replica of his palace built every 700 miles so he could spend the night in his own bedroom. B, he had two fresh live lobsters flown to wherever the train was every evening for his dinner. Or C, he commissioned the world's only heated swimming pool train car. Sloshing was a problem.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I'd like all of those things. Can we arrange those for my next trip?
Those would be great. Those would be great. Wait a minute. Doesn't your NPR contract get you those? Because I get the lobsters in the pool. I don't know.
It's part of the NFL pension agreement, actually.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to go with the, I think since I failed on the chef question, we're going to go with food again. Lobsters.
Lobsters. Lobsters is your choice? I'm just asking you to confirm it.
In a neutral tone of voice.
Yes.
Is that the tone of voice that...
Totally neutral. Totally neutral. No.
I don't know.
No.
I don't know. I don't
just making it more exciting.
I'd tell you if I could.
You know what? Since the scratch golfing was so preposterous, the most preposterous is building a house for him every 700 miles. Let's go with that.
You sure?
No.
All right, make your final choice.
We'll go with A.
You're going to go with A? No, it was the lobsters.
Oh, no.
I didn't mean to talk you out of it. I was just trying to increase the tension.
You've been cut from the team.
Back with you to double it. No, I'm sorry. Yes, it was in fact the lobsters. He ate them every evening with silver chopsticks. So, Carl, how did Stefan Fatsis do in this particular athletic endeavor?
I'd say he was a better kicker.
Yeah.
Which is not saying much, Carl. Yeah.
He needed two correct answers, Peter, but Stefan had just one correct answer to win for David Andrews.
I'm sorry, David.
Stefan Fatsis is a regular commentator in NPR's All Things Considered. He's also the author of a number of books, including Word Freak and the just-published A Few Seconds of Panic about his actual career as an NFL kicker. Stefan Fatsis, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Peter.
Great
Thanks,
to see
everybody.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, Stefan.
Thanks, everybody. In just a minute, Carl sets up shop on the internet, offering used furniture, tickets to sold-out shows, and casual encounters. It's a game we're going to call Carl's List. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Amy, last week we told listeners that the tough economic times were making it hard even for the mafia. Well, this week, from Britain, we got a report that another powerful but mysterious figure is suffering, who's just not able to hand out the big bonuses like she used to.
Would it be Her Majesty the Queen?
No, she's still loaded.
Oh, she's still loaded. Okay, bonuses.
She's also rich, but that's another story.
Who is not able?
She's more ruthless than the mafia. She's got a cover. Don't worry about that.
Economy. Is this an icon of England?
Well, it's a sort of international icon. I'll give you a hint. Nowadays, all you find under your pillow is some lint.
The Tooth Fairy?
The Tooth Fairy. A British firm commissioned a survey in which 1,000 parents were asked what their children received from the tooth fairy in exchange for a tooth placed under the pillow. The average payment for a tooth has been cut almost in half in the last year or so. 38% of British children get nothing at all as a result of the tough economy. The tooth fairy, in addition, because of the economic drawdown, was forced to sell her home near Big Rock Candy Mountain, has moved into subsidized fairy housing with Tinkerbell, the fairy godmother, and Elton John. Roy, in this post-9/11 world, security is a big issue everywhere. This week, a certain highly prized classified document was removed from its vault in preparation to move it to an even more secure location surrounded by armed guards. What is this special document?
I happen to know what this is, I think. It's Kentucky Fried Chicken formula, all the spices and things.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
It's Colonel Sanders' secret recipe, 11 herbs and spices. Unfortunately for customers, we're pretty sure the recipe does not include Lipitor, but the 68-year-old concoction is so precious that only 2 KFC executives have access to it at any one time, and the company doesn't release their names.
Because they're afraid of being attacked by chickens.
Yes. Previously, the recipe was kept in a filing cabinet with 2 locks behind a door, 3 locks inside a vault. Some security experts questioned the need for an upgrade, considering that most KFC customers couldn't have fit through the door in the first place. So here's what I don't understand. They say, well, this is the secret recipe, and only 2 people know it at any one time. It's like, you know, the missile codes for the launch of nuclear war. Only 2 people, they have to, you know, make it. Only one of them knows half of it, the other one. Mm-hmm. You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
They make 40 million pieces of fried chicken a day with this recipe, and only 2 guys know it. Mm. So what? Are they like running around to all the stores and mixing it up and going, here, I got to go over to...
It's 11 secret herbs and spices,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. 7 of them are salt, and the rest of them are pepper.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. The Russians better not get their hands on
this. All right. Paul.
Yes, sir.
As you know, social networking sites like Facebook and MySpace are becoming extremely popular with people of all ages. Well, this week, an announcement was made that a new social networking site would be created, specifically designed for whom?
People who have no social skills.
No. You know him?
Yeah. He was sort of right. People who have no social skills.
No, I don't think we're thinking, I don't know if we're thinking of the
Never
same
mind.
Thing. Maybe we are. Like in the favorite movie thing, you list your favorite movie, everybody will have a James Bond movie.
This would be undercover people.
Yeah,
people.
Spies.
Spies.
Oh, spies. Ooh. If you're an undercover agent, you'll soon be able to join A-Space, a new social networking site designed especially for people who can't tell anyone anything about themselves. Quote, it's every bit Facebook and YouTube for spies, but it's much, much more, said Michael Wertheimer. He's a spy. Not anymore. Only people with high-level security clearance will be able to access the site, where members of the CIA and NSA will be able to friend each other, poke each other with fake poisoned umbrella tips, and post highly classified documents on each other's super fun walls.
Yeah. I just took down a third world dictator, LOL.
Exactly. The thing was going fine, then everyone went nuts when Valerie Plame Wilson changed her relationship status to single.
I was like, whoa! There are emoticons all have a little patch over one eye.
You could click on my site, but then I'd have to kill you.
Yeah.
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's time for some newsmakers to place some online ads. If you'd like to play on air, call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. You can always send an email to us anytime you like. waitwait@npr.org is the address. You can also go to our website at waitwait.npr.org. You can find out there about attending our weekly live shows, mostly here at the Chase Auditorium in Chicago, and pretty soon back on the road again. You can also visit the NPR shop to pick up your Wait Wait tchotchkes. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Darren Drevick from Woodstock, Georgia.
Now, Woodstock, Georgia, I've been to Woodstock, New York, and Woodstock, Illinois. Where's Woodstock, Georgia?
Woodstock, Georgia is just north of Atlanta. It's a lot like Woodstock, New York, except we have more tractors and a few less hippies.
Really? Because you don't care for them sort down there or something like that.
Well, no, hippies are great. They just sort of go far out, y'all.
Darren, welcome to our show. Now, you are going to play a new game. We're calling it Carl's List. You know about Craigslist, the free classified ad site, favorite web destination for people who want to buy old cars or have quickies with desperate guys or married guys or desperate married guys or Paul. Well, it seemed to us that some newsmakers this week could have used a well-placed ad, so we came up with some of them. Carl will read for you three made-up online classifieds. Your job, tell us what they're about. Do that 2 times out of 3. You'll win our prize, Carl's voice, on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
I am very ready. Sounds great.
Your first ad comes from the Help Wanted section of the Carl's List site.
Extremely successful football team needs new quarterback right now. Should be a self-starter with leading man looks. Aw, shucks, demeanor, and tougher knees. Additional duties, magazine covers, dating supermodel, chiseling your own dimple.
So you imagine that ad was placed by the New England Patriots now that they've lost the services of whom?
That would be the distinguished quarterback, Mr. Brady.
Yes, indeed. Tom Brady. It was the very first game. Patriots fans were looking forward to another great season. Then an opposing player jumped onto Tom Brady's knee, causing a season-ending injury. So the Patriots turned to backup Matt Cassel, who managed to win that game. He says he hopes he can stand up, do his job, and lead the Patriots to another undefeated season before once again choking in the Super Bowl. Tom's girlfriend, supermodel Gisele Bündchen, says she's also ready to work with Tom's replacement just as soon as he learns the plays. Very good. Here's your next ad. We found this one in the for sale section.
These two charming mortgage giants are the perfect fixer-uppers for a young couple. All they need to return to solvency is some elbow grease, a little TLC, and a total reversal of the global economy. Why dream of owning a home when you can own all of them? $100 billion or best offer.
So what mortgage giants got sold to the taxpayers this week?
That would be Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
You are good. Yes, that's exactly right. We will not pretend we understand exactly what happened. We don't even understand why two of the most important financial institutions in America are named like characters on the Dukes of Hazzard. Basically, Freddie Mae, Fannie Mac together own $5 trillion worth of mortgages, so if they failed, the entire nation would have shown up on your doorstep asking if they could crash in your den. All right. Here is your last ad. This one is from the Casual Encounters section.
I'll be traveling very, very quickly through France next summer and looking for someone to massage my legs. If you bring syringes, be discreet. I'll be the one wearing the alluring tight shorts and the yellow jersey riding for Team Ensure.
What world-famous athlete is looking to make a late career comeback next summer in France?
That's going to have to be probably cyclist Lance Armstrong.
You're right again. Very good. So after beating cancer and then winning the Tour de France 7 times in a row, Mr. Armstrong never really seemed comfortable as a multimillionaire retiree. He seemed antsy. He trash-talked his kids during games of chutes and ladders. He challenged his own private jet to a race. So, he has unretired and will ride again next year in France at the advanced age of 37. He wants to prove he still got it, but he does say that because of his age, he'll put aside the titanium race bike and instead do the Tour de France on an electric grocery store scooter. Carl, how did Darren do in our quiz?
Darren had 3 correct answers, Peter, so Darren, you win our prize.
Well done, Darren.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations.
Guys. Thank you very much. It was great. Enjoy.
Thanks for playing. Take care.
Thank you.
Bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill in the blank questions as they can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Roy Blunt Jr. and Paul Provenza each has 3 points. Amy Dickinson has 2.
All right. So, Amy, you are in third place. You're going to start first. Here we go. The clock will start when they begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Presidential candidates Obama and McCain both joined Michael Bloomberg for the 9/11 ceremony held at blank.
Ground Zero.
Right. Passengers were evacuated after a fire broke out Thursday in the blank between England and France.
The Channel?
Yes, the Channel, the tunnel under the Channel. A former intelligence official told the AP that President Bush secretly approved U.S. military raids inside blank.
Pakistan.
Right. Harry Reid's office said that contrary to reports, Democrats had not excluded blank from their weekly caucus lunches. He was just chosen not to attend.
Joe Lieberman.
Right. A middle school teacher had some bruises and light scratches after he blanked while riding his bicycle to school.
Fainted?
Hit a bear. On Tuesday, the Washington Post reported that Governor Sarah Palin used her travel allowance for 300 nights she spent at blank.
Her home.
Right. The ever-expanding search engine company blank turned 10 this week.
Google.
Right. Two farm workers in California were shocked when they woke up to find a man blanking.
Blanking?
No, rubbing them with spices and hitting them with a sausage.
Wouldn't you be?
Of course. Yes.
No, Amy has come to expect that, Sal. The sign of her life these days. Police arrested him. They had no explanation for why he had been seasoning the men and hitting them with a sausage. And sadly, they had to let him go. This is true because the primary piece of evidence, the sausage, was eaten by a dog. So, Carl, how did Amy do in our quiz?
Amy had a good round. 6 correct answers, 12 more points. She now has 14 points, and Amy has the lead.
All right. All right, we flipped a coin. Roy has elected to go next. So, Roy, fill in the blank. People along the Texas coast were evacuated in anticipation of Hurricane Blank.
Ike.
Right, this week, 2008, became officially the deadliest year yet for U.S. troops serving in blank.
Afghanistan.
Right. Continental Airlines announced that it expects to raise $100 million by charging passengers to blank.
Go to the restroom.
Check bags. Jury selection began in Las Vegas for the kidnapping robbery trial of blank.
O.J. Simpson.
Right. An Australian government official resigned after reports came that he blanked at his parliamentary office party.
Moon somebody.
Almost danced around in his underwear. At an event in San Francisco on Thursday, Steve Jobs unveiled a new line of blanks.
iPod.
Right. After an altercation with a photographer at LAX, rapper Blank was arrested.
Kanye West.
Right. Israeli airport security officers took the unusual step of ordering a passenger to Blank to prove his identity.
Dance.
Right. The guy said he was a member of the Alvin Ailey dance troupe, coming to Israel for a tour, but he had an Arab name, Abdur Rahim Jackson. So how best to determine if he was who he said he was? Well, he says he's a dancer. So dance, sir, right. Dance.
Did they, shoot at his feet?
No, they did not do that. However, he did do a bit of dance, and they said, okay, you're a dancer. They released him to his friends and colleagues.
Hey, look at this guy.
The security team was very happy with their new technique. Hmm. They abandoned the idea when they saw the next guy in line was named Michael Flatley. Carl, how did Roy do in our quiz?
Roy had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Roy has moved into the lead.
Mm. All right, then.
Vroom, vroom,
right.
Vroom, vroom.
Woo, baby.
Carl, how many, then, does Paul need to win?
Paul needs 6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right, here we go, Paul. This is for the game, fill in the blank. President Bush announced that 8,000 troops would be pulled out of blank by February.
Iraq.
Right, angry over the invasion of Georgia, President Bush announced that he would cancel the deal for civilian nuclear cooperation between the United States and blank.
Russia.
Right, when an investment newsletter published an old news story about blank's 2002 bankruptcy, stocks of the airline plunged
United.
75%. Right. A judge ruled that J.K. Rowling's copyright was violated by a fan planning to publish a blank lexicon.
Potter's encyclopedia.
Something Harry like Potter, that, yes. Lexicon. Harry Potter. Yeah. Psychologists are shocked at the results of a new study which indicates that blank is not the number one priority for most men.
Sex.
Right. The owner of the historic Astroland amusement park at blank announced it will be closing
Coney
for
Island.
Good. Right. The attorney for Senator Blank appeared in court this week to argue that his bathroom sex sting guilty plea should be rescinded.
Larry Craig.
Right. A police in New Jersey responded to the sound of a woman screaming, broke into the apartment, and found Blank.
Larry Craig.
I wish, in a way. No, what they really found was a cockatoo named Luna, and this is the second time Luna has had a run-in with the law. When she was 3 years old, she sounded so much like a crying infant that neighbors called the police. Then this week, Trenton police received reports of a woman screaming, "Help me, help me," from inside the same apartment. They go, they break down the door again, and once again, it's Luna. Luna says, "What can I say? I missed you guys." Officers said they expect to enter the apartment again in about 20 years when Luna starts yelling, "Help, I've fallen and I can't get up." All right. Carl, it seems Paul did very well. Did he do well enough to win?
He needed 7 correct answers to win. He had 7 correct answers. So with 17 points, Paul Provenza is this week's champion.
Well done.
Yes.
I'm so excited. Carl, do I get your voice on my answering machine?
No, but we won't stuff you in the locker.
That's good enough for me. I'm happy. I'm ahead of the game.
In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists what will happen to our world now that the Hadron Collider has been activated. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners on the web at Realtor.com, the Music Performance Fund, striving to enrich lives by sponsoring thousands of public concerts in the United States, schedules at MusicPF.org, and to the Annenberg Foundation, advancing public well-being through improved communication on the web at AnnenbergFoundation.org. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our intern is Ann Cadigan. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our technical director is Robert Newhouse. Other engineers include Lorna White, Lester Larchick, and Muhammad Mao. Thanks to John Zajac and Jewel Dulce at Chase Bank. BJ Litterman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer and produced this week by Emily Ecton with Dan Pashman. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mike Danforth. Now, panel, how is the Hadron Collider going to change the world now that they flicked it on? Paul Provenza.
It will create yet another black hole into which we will be sucked forever with no exit strategy.
Amy Dickinson.
The particles will become celebrities. Michael Phelps will race them. Lindsay Lohan will date them. And everyone else will want to be their friend.
Roy Blunt Jr.
We will know all about the material universe. It will be there. We'll know where all the little charts and quarks fit together. We'll have the model of it. It'll be so. This will affect relationships, because never again, when one person says, "What's the matter?" will the other person be able to say, "Oh, nothing."
Well, if the Hadron Collider does any of those things, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you, Carl Castle. Thanks also to Paul Provenza, Amy Dickinson, and Roy Blunt Jr. Thanks to our audience here at the Chase Bank Auditorium. You're great. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal. We will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.